It's the first day of August 2015, and we are live here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Of course, we are listener-supported, so there is a donate banner there on the front page, and we would appreciate it if you thought about, if you went and clicked it, if you actually did it, if you became a regular subscriber, whatever it takes. Anything is also appreciated, but this is the Ocelli Effect. And you know, I do always forget to mention my own name, and a couple of people contacted me recently and didn't realize that my name was Chuck. Pretty funny. Yes, C-H-U-C-K, Chuck, that's me. I will forget to bring up my own name because I'm more concerned about presenting you the ideas of others, not necessarily my own name, although it sounds kind of weird considering the name of the show. I just thought it was unique, and I just wasn't feeling very creative when I came up with it. There you go, that's the explanation. Anyway, the Ocelli Effect, yes, that is what this is. And I'll tell you something, one of the most compelling subjects that has ever come up on the show and is a constant, point of discussion is 9/11, all right? Now, everybody has their own view. I've gotten to the realization that everybody has their own unique perspective on this, especially those of us in the well, God, I hate to use any of those titles, tags, whatever. Freedom, truth, come on. All of this stuff is really ridiculous. How about we just try being honest for a little while? I really want to redub it honest media. But anyway, here's the thing. We all have different perspectives. I've had different people on, everybody from, you know, people from architects and engineers on to the individuals to tell you that there were absolutely no planes on to, well, other people that I kind of regret. But nevertheless, I have always thrown it open for discussion. Now, my guest tonight is Dean Hartwell, and I'll tell you something. Dean, who I appreciate as an author, not necessarily for the conclusions he comes up with, but for the thought process he goes through in order to create, well, gee, there's 10 books, I think, at this point, or more than 10 books. I'm not exactly sure, but you know what? Every time I have picked up something by him, I see a lot of logical thoughts. I see a lot of very well-grounded research. So I appreciate Dean's work. Whether I agree necessarily with his conclusions or not, that remains to be seen, and I'll leave that to the judgment of the listener. But I'll tell you something. It's definitely well-grounded and makes sense, unlike many other people that call themselves authors. So, how you doing tonight, Dean?
Just great, Chuck. Beautiful day out here.
Well, you know, it was a pretty nice day in North Carolina, too. Kind of hot.
Yeah, kind of hot. It's okay.
You know, but it's all right. You know, you gotta have some... I like the changing seasons myself.
What are those?
Oh, right.
I'm from L.A.
That's why I threw it at you. I knew you were going to say something like that.
Chuck.
The new book is called Was 9/11 a Movie? Now, that premise on the face of it, for some people, is like, oh, come on. Is this going to be one of those guys who's going to tell me that everything was CGI'd and all this kind of stuff? Hold off, fellas. Hold off, ladies. Hold off. Well, gee, there's 25 different classifications for sexuality now, according to Facebook, I think. But the thing is, hold off a little bit because I want to give Dean a chance to discuss this and why it is he named the book what he did. Let's start there, Dean. Why is it that you named it Was 9/11 a Movie?
I wanted a question. I want people to think about the premise before I can take people into considering that it was a movie. I've got to get them to think about the idea that it's tenable. And like you were saying, there are some people that just don't care for the idea right off the top. But I thought phrasing as a question and putting in some ideas where there's some serious questions about being, quote, reality, unquote, I thought that would get people to look at it, and I got a nice cover to get them to open it. And always my hope they'll like it after reading the first chapter.
Hmm. Well, you know, my favorite book so far from you that I've, you know, gone through is actually Questions I Wasn't Supposed to Ask, right?
Yes.
That one, first of all, the cover is kind of cool because it's got that red and green thing happening, which always reminds me of, you know, the idea that people are colorblind in a lot of cases. So I see a lot of different things going on that cover, even though it's relatively simple in design.
Right.
Same thing happens here with this cover. Okay, because it is a relatively simple design, but it also leaves it open. And I find that concept interesting also. And yeah, you do have to consider, was it a movie and all that? Now, I know for a fact that it wasn't entirely a movie. There are people that speculate that none of this stuff actually happened. Okay? But
I don't go that far.
No, I didn't say you did. I'm saying there are people that do.
Oh, right? I agree.
And I know you've heard it. I know you had to have encountered it at some point where absolutely nothing happened that day. Nobody died. Nothing occurred at all whatsoever. It was all a movie trailer that you guys saw over and over again. No, folks, that's not possible. And I'm going to tell you really quickly why I know that's not possible. I mean, considering that I can trust my own senses, okay? You know, the tactile, the olfactory, those things that you have in your own body. Considering that I can trust those as a source of information, I was in New Jersey that day, okay? So I know that there was a terrible disaster on the other side of the river. I know for a fact. I know that I tried to get into New York City to try and assist people because that's the kind of guy I am. I also know that there was a cloud of crap which went across into New Jersey. You could smell it. You could taste it. All right? Now, I'm not talking about what I saw on the television, am I, Dean?
No, those are first-hand impressions.
Right. These are first-hand impressions. So, therefore, I'm sorry, but I absolutely disregard the idea that nothing happened that day. And I think you do too. So let's begin with that concept of the ridiculous and try and reduce it down to the realistic.
Okay. Let's look at some things that make no sense and add them up. Look at some of the details. For example, the detail of Betty Ong. Betty Ong was said to be a flight attendant on American Airlines 11. And she was reported to have made a phone call to the reservations department of American Airlines. There is a recording of such a phone call. You can access it on YouTube and probably other places as well, where a woman calling herself Betty Ong makes a phone call and it makes a number of statements about somebody being killed on the plane, and the people responding eventually go to an emergency line to try to figure out what they can do about it. Ultimately, nothing can be done, it's determined. And looking at some of the things that Betty Ong says, for example, she refers to flight as a flight 12 at one point. And you can say, well, okay, she was under duress.
Well, she was under stress, and mistakes are made under stress. I mean, people in high-stress situations misspeak sometimes, make outcries that are not necessarily tied to the situation. It might be what's in their visual field at the time. This could be a simple misstatement on the alleged Betty Ong phone call, right? That's one thing you could dismiss as a matter of just, you know, human inaccuracy. Okay, so what else?
She goes on to say, we're on flight 11 right now, which is kind of an unusual thing to say during a conversation. We're up in the air, though she made the call to reservations explaining that she was on an airplane. She doesn't sound jittery. She doesn't sound nervous. And there is absolutely no sound whatsoever in the background, even though she's saying she's seeing a person get killed and seeing a mace being used.
Well, I'll tell you something. When I went over this with Rebecca Roth, and I do promise you I'm not going to keep cutting you off on these ideas, but I want to give it a chance. When I went over this with Rebecca Roth, who wrote the book Methodical Illusion, which American Freedom Radio listeners, you can hear that when I substituted for Vinnie Eastwood in his archives. But the thing is, we talked about this, and the use of mace in a closed area like that, you're not going to have somebody speaking calmly, right? I mean, you made this observation as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay.
I go into detail on this particular call.
Okay, go ahead.
Betty Young, that's one example, and I do encourage people to look at the transcript and to listen to the call. There are approximately 4.5 minutes available to the public, and I do provide the link for that. And it's also noted that the phone call itself lasted close to 25 minutes, and it brings up a question I'm not supposed to ask. What happened to the other 20 minutes? Why on earth would they not play them for us? And it causes me to feel just a bit suspicious about what might have been said. Now, other things go on about American Airlines. As I've noted in previous books, but I make it clear, and I go into even more detail than before, about the airlines. American Airlines 11, according to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, was never scheduled to fly on that day and did not take off.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any better evidence as far as records go. And
did
if
you make that
also,
you made that point in Planes Without Pilots, didn't you? Or Planes Without Passengers, sorry.
Planes Without Passengers, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I hammered the point. I'm bringing the evidence together saying we could make a hypothesis that this wasn't real, that there really wasn't an American 11 flight, that there really wasn't a hijacking, that there really wasn't a plane crash. And the absence of that particular reality, which is known as the official theory, we can start to construct another story. And that's what the whole book is about, constructing a different theory based on the idea that many things, like this particular call, were scripted in advance. It's about a script.
Mm.
It's about people following scripts.
Well, right, and that's part of the problem here, is that the missing evidence actually begs the question, right?
Because
when you have the lack of things that are supposed to be there, okay, it causes you to wonder, right? I mean, look, every time, even when we see these very popular police, you know, camera videos and everything else, right? What is the question when we see the highlight reel on, you know, the mainstream media is, well, how come I don't see what happened before? You know, and that's a valid question, right? Because what occurred before actually speaks to how this thing escalated, et cetera, in a case of a police video. And the same thing is present here. They're missing procedures. They're missing all kinds of things that would have and should have occurred, right, during a real situation like this. I mean, you know, everybody loves to point to the fact that jets weren't scrambled and things like that. And this is a reality. I mean, there should have been a response, okay? But the thing is, there's stuff missing not in one place, but many places, right, Dean?
Exactly. It's missing in the Todd Beamer script, as I call it. Now, he's probably the best known of the alleged passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposedly the one who shouted, "Let's roll." Except if you take a close look at information provided extemporaneously or at the time that the call supposedly happened, or interviews that were done shortly afterwards, there's no mention of "Let's roll" for quite a number of days after 9/11. And there's nothing said about Todd Beamer having been a hero publicly until his boss at Oracle, Larry Ellison, sent out a memo to his employees saying, among other things, "We know Todd Beamer is dead. We believe he died when he and other passengers aboard Flight 93 tried to recover the hijacked airplane from the terrorists." That seems like a script, except the guy just spoke out a little too soon. I can't really think of that as being real. How on earth would Mr. Ellison have known anything about Beamer and what he did on the airplane, which, again, it may have that particular plane may have taken off. However, I don't, and as I point out, the plane did quite a different direction than what we're told. So, again, things are missing. The official story goes in a way that makes no sense, and I feel like it was time to write a different theory, a different story. Beamer is a classic way of doing that because the story just doesn't make any sense.
Right. It doesn't fit in with the narrative. Even the official narrative, it kind of makes no sense because how did they get informed exactly? How were the cell phones? I mean, you can't really reconstruct the chain of events the way one would have to. You know, say if I was bringing this to a court,
right,
okay, and I was to allege that there were hijackers aboard a plane and we had no information that came from anywhere, people would want the forensics or something in order to show that there was a reason for me to have a particular story together that that would point toward the alleged individuals being guilty, right?
Right.
Now, the problem here, though, is that all of the official stories, okay, and I call them stories, and notice I made sure to stress on the fact that there's more than one.
Oh, yeah.
The reason is that the official line doesn't fit with all of these other sub-official stories. Now, a lot of that was seized upon to kind of grab the American public at their gut or at their heart in order to, you know, ratchet up anti-Middle Eastern sentiment in this country, as far as I'm concerned. That was what it was used for. But that doesn't, in and of itself, speak to the reality of the situation. The fact that there are so many divergent stories is the biggest problem here.
It is. It's all a big mess. You get truths, half-truths, and outright lies. And it's taken me a number of years to try to distinguish. I mean, I started studying the matter of 9/11 probably 2005. So I've looked into this for 10 years and researched it. And it's just hard to distinguish sometimes what's real, what's not, who's telling the truth, who's telling the truth sometimes and not other times. Very confusing.
Right.
But again, the purpose of the book.
Right. So where did that process begin? Did you begin with the phone calls, or do you just look to that to make an example of things that didn't fit? Or was it just things that didn't fit all over the place that actually made you have to write this particular book?
Well, as I did, that a number of things just didn't fit. In fact, so many that I wanted to write a story about that. And I mentioned in the book a turning point was when I was listening to the Ong phone call, and I just got a completely different picture of what was happening than what we're told. We're told, of course, this is a flight attendant speaking about a hijacking. I'm getting a picture of a woman sitting at a table reading a script and really frustrated about being told to say these things. I get the picture that it was some sort of a simulation that was perhaps live at the time, so to speak, but later used to get people to believe that something terrible had happened, hijacking, terrorism, and furthermore, to get people to support a war, or more than one war.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of things. But I think that just struck a nerve. And that's often how I decide what to write. Something hits a nerve, it catches me emotionally, and I make that the turning point, or perhaps part of the basis of the book.
Mm. Well, I got to say that's really interesting, because it does present itself as a totally different scenario, and the idea that it could be a script, that it was a simulation. There were various simulations that we have now found out about that were going on that day. But this is kind of weird, because this is a civilian who's, you know, allegedly a flight attendant, behaving unlike a flight attendant should,
right.
You know, discussing things in a way that sounds very strange. I always found it extremely striking, her confusion on numbers and, you know, and identifying people by their numbers and things like that. I found that very odd. What did you think of that?
Yeah, she says, "I'm sitting in number 3. And I delved into that, and it appeared that she was somewhere she wasn't supposed to be. I got that impression, at least, reading more about airline attendants and reading an article that I really liked on Let's Roll forums that clued me in a bit about how the phone, the Airphone from Flight 11, or the plane that was to be Flight 11, was used outside the plane. The plane never took off.
Mm.
Just different sources. You take the sources as you find them. You just have to find it. Does it make sense? Is this reliable? Is it connecting to anything? And that's certainly connected on Flight 11. Also, just one more thing, Chuck. I do go into detail about Barbara Olson as another person that just doesn't seem to fit in. If this were reality, this was something that truly happened, that she was truly on Flight 77 and truly called her husband Ted a number of times, telling him that there's been a hijacking and asking for his advice at what to do. But it was more than that. I point out that very little is known about her days leading up to 9/11. We don't really know where she was, except we have Ted Olson's word in an interview he gave with Larry King that she was going to fly from Virginia to Los Angeles on the day before 9/11 and decided to take a later flight because it was his birthday on 9/11. But very little other than that, she leaves, according to Ted, before he gets up, so no clue how she got to the airport, or even if she got there. I don't think she did, obviously.
Hmm. Well, and that is kind of bizarre. I mean, of course, Barbara Olson is a fascinating figure for a couple of different reasons. I mean, first of all, kind of strange that she's flying for what purpose? I can't remember now. What was the purpose of her flight?
She was to go to Bill Maurer's show in Los Angeles. Yeah, he was. It wasn't called Real Time then. It was called Politically Incorrect. And she was to be a guest. Even though they differed politically, apparently they were friends, and she was on there a lot as a guest.
Oh, yeah, okay, now I recall this. Yeah, it was Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. That was that show. Yeah, now it's called Real Time. It's virtually the same kind of thing, except it's on HBO instead of a network where you got to worry about broadcast standards. Yes. That now I recall that. And I'll tell you something, though. It's just kind of weird the way that sort of came out. The fact that coincidentally one of the most prominent people winds up getting a phone call. Of course, the entire thing about 77 is riddled with all sorts of reality holes, you know?
Right. Did it even take off? And if it did, where did it go? Did it really crash into the Pentagon? That was one of the early questions I remember about 9/11. Did it really crash there? And obviously, I don't think it did. I don't think there's any evidence that was left behind that would suggest that it was actually a plane crash.
Mm. Yeah, totally bizarre aftermath with that crash and everything else. I mean, it's obvious to me that's not a plane. But, look, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But here's the thing. How do you get an airplane to fly that low and go into a place and defy aerodynamic science entirely, hold itself together, take out light poles, and actually penetrate a building that has that kind of structure? Well, let's begin with the fact that you don't even think it took off. That's now the second time you've said it about yet another plane here. Why is that?
Why do I say it? Or why do they not have the plane take off?
Oh, no. Why are you saying that? I was kind of leaving that open so you could go where you wanted to with it. But the thing is, I just figured, why do you keep saying the planes didn't take off? Because most people don't say that about these flights, you know. They say, well, you know, this wasn't the flight, and they changed at some point or whatever. And, a couple of people point to the fact that some of the planes were still on the registry afterwards and stuff like that. But nobody really says that they think the plane never took off that day. So I was curious about that particular statement because that's the second plane you mentioned that you don't even think took off.
Right. Okay. Well, of course, read the official account and it narrowed down to four planes. I think numerically a lot, and I thought 11 and 77. We've got, I think, compelling evidence that the Bureau of Transportation Statistics records were altered so as to not reveal any information about the flights. The original records are or were at one time available, and they showed clearly that 11 and 77 were not scheduled and did not take off, and that the other two planes in question did, that those being 93 and 175. But, I mean, again, thinking in terms of this being a script, adopting that as a hypothesis, why even bother having airplanes go off, and why even bother having passengers? None of these so-called passengers can be pinned down as being at an airport or having even having been driven to an airport, to the very best of my knowledge. Why do we need passengers if we're putting together this script, which is going to convince the public that we need to go to war against this certain group of people or these certain nations? We can use deception, and people buy it. People have bought the Todd Beamer story. There's no evidence at all. He said, let's roll, but people believe that because they want to believe it. And so, too, with a lot of the rest of the official stories.
Hmm. Well, even on that recording, it doesn't sound like him who actually utters that kind of muffled statement. To me, anyway.
Was there a recording? Did you hear a recording on it?
Yeah, there's a recording of part of it, yeah. And there's kind of a... there's kind of a muffled sort of sound in the background where you could interpret that as somebody saying, let's roll, but that's it.
Right.
It's weird. It's very, very weird. But here's the question that, you know, somebody's going to ask you is, okay, so if that's the case, you're telling me that how many families here have to be involved in the deception as well, because a lot of people have been paraded out in the media as the survivors of, the receivers of the phone calls. There was a whole documentary that one of those mainstream history type channels or Discovery or God knows what did that I saw that was only based on the phone calls, actually. And they explained in there, you know, they had the people on that received the calls and some of the recordings and, of course, Betty Ong's whole thing and the description and little flashes, you know, document shots of the transcripts and all this stuff. And they discuss in there, you know, well, I lost this person, I got this call on my answering machine, and whatever else, right? So what about those people? So were they in on it, or did they lose their loved ones, or were they deceived as well? I mean, what is somebody left to think, if this is true, that there weren't these passengers on these planes that day? Well, what about the people that received the calls?
They could well have been in on it. They were the ones who reported it to the authorities that they had gotten calls. Some of them went on TV and helped to perpetuate the whole story. And you might say, as I think you did a minute ago, that there are a whole bunch of family members, alleged family members, claiming this and that. We, I think, are attracted emotionally. I think we want to believe that they've suffered something, or else why would they be saying it out loud in the public? But again, seeing things from a different point of view, there's clearly deception going on behind this whole script, and people could well have been paid to go and say, hey, I lost somebody, or I knew somebody on this plane, or this or that. I don't think it's just automatic that just because someone goes on TV claiming something that they're telling the truth. And also, about the phone calls, there's just no way those calls happened. Not at the levels the planes were going, not considering that there were no hijackings anyway. It's just, and I do point this out in the book, I talk about the chronology needed. I go into very lengthy timelines about each of the alleged flights. And I point out some of the inconsistencies of statements being made. And, again, just no evidence that even the two planes that actually took off actually flew into something. There's no record of remains of these planes or the passengers themselves. It's a tough call. It's tough to say, hey, I don't believe what people are saying when they talk about being victims or about being related to victims. But I'm going to stand up and say that I don't believe it.
Hmm. Well, what do you think would take you, what do you think it would take to convince you, I mean to say, that there were people on those planes or things like that? I mean, what is it that you would expect to find if that were true?
I'd expect to see some logic to it. If these planes were truly hijacked and phone calls are made, there'd have to be some logic to not just the story of them getting on a plane, but the rest of the story. Who were they before this? Did they really get to the airport? Did somebody take them there? Can they verify that? Did somebody actually sit at the gate that they were to take off at? Because this was before, well, before 9/11, when people could actually take people to the gate, non-passengers could sit there and wait until the plane left.
Oh yeah, well let's make sure we remember to mention the, you know, post 9/11 reality versus the pre 9/11 reality.
Yeah,
right. There was a different sort of posture when it came to airport security in this country, you know, and you didn't have these grope fests going on in your airports everywhere. Okay,
right.
You know, this was a different time. You know, security cameras probably a little bit lax and everything else. I mean, look, it was an airplane. We didn't have an event like this in this country, really. I mean, there were some events that had occurred at certain points, but they were never anything like what this turned out into, allegedly, right?
So
this kind of thing was, you know, much like they presented it, you know, they blindsided us with this one, you know, kind of deal. And if it actually happened, yeah, it would be true. We would have never expected this because nothing like this had ever happened before. But, I mean, that's a lot of people to get involved in it. And like you said, you lay out chronologies, trying to put together a logical path that, by which, you know, I imagine you don't focus on everybody because that would have been a much larger book.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Right.
But you know, give us an idea of some lesser known examples, maybe that we could think about and try and trace.
Okay, well, I did receive an email some time ago from a person on the East Coast. I don't reveal his name. He does tell me in his email that he knew somebody that was on a particular flight, Flight 11, and we corresponded, and I asked the questions very much like the questions I was just asking a minute ago. Hypothetically, I did ask them about this particular person. And I say in the book, I assume the good faith of the person who emailed me. I don't think that he was trying to snowball me with something. He was quite unlike other people who have contacted me, telling me how terrible I am to suggest that there weren't really victims on the plane flights.
Mm-hmm.
And this person sounded sincere, and this, he insisted that his friend, whom I identify as 11X, was a real person, and that he took a flight. He didn't actually watch this happen, as I would ask about, but he took a flight from Boston to Los Angeles that morning. He told me that he got this information from another source. It wasn't really the person I was talking to saying it directly. He was referring to a third party, saying that he had overheard a phone conversation involving 11X, saying he was on the telephone that morning asking to get a taxi to be driven to the airport in question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hearsay, and I'm going by another person's word. And I don't know what happened even then, that even if we take that to be the truth, what I've just stated, that the man said, that the passenger really did get in a taxi on the way to a particular airport, we don't know what happened after that. And it's more of that things that are not stated or we have no evidence of. We don't know.
So it seems like almost no matter what you examine here, you have a continuously broken chain of evidence and a chain of events, because if you were to prove that somebody did that, you would have to sort of verify with some sort of evidence that, okay, like you said, 11X gets in a taxi. Okay, if we can verify that, or we simply accept the word of this now third-party source, the thing is, it doesn't necessarily mean that the taxi made it to the airport. It
right.
doesn't necessarily mean that even if the taxi made it to the airport, that the individual was still in the taxi.
Right.
Okay. There's a lot of things that you have to show, and what you're telling me is that every time that you looked into one of these situations, you found a broken chain where there was no way of verifying A to B to C to D.
This is as close as it got, this particular case, 11X.
Well, a lot of people probably wouldn't have verifiable stories, you know. They would have only the residual, you know, effect of maybe somebody knew that they were going to take a trip. They booked the thing themselves, they drove themselves, whatever else. But then that kind of leaves the question, well, what about, you know, did they leave a car? Did they leave luggage somehow? Did they have any other sort of photographic evidence of this person getting on the plane? I mean, did you look into all that stuff as well?
I did look into it, and also whether anybody saw them at the airport, the people who would have noticed, people working at the airport. And I did point out in a passage in the book, I was citing Elias Davidson, whom I've read and have respect for. He tried to obtain this information through official channels, the Freedom of Information Act, and writing letters to the airlines, and they said, no, we can't reveal whether our personnel saw any passengers. That's a matter of privacy. So it's locked up. I don't understand why we locked up. Why wouldn't we want to verify that this truly happened if we're going to use it as an impetus to go to war?
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, through a Freedom of Information Act, even if you requested this stuff, like, say, from the FBI, who would have obviously been partially involved in the investigation. As a matter of fact, I think that was the first agency I remember being announced as involved in the investigation. Of course, later on, you know, the NTSB and all this other stuff has to get involved as well because of the situation. But either way, you have an official government organization investigating. They had to have conducted interviews. They had to have reconstructed at least some of these scenarios, if not all of them, right? I mean, that
right.
would be the logical conclusion, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's would make sense. If they would investigate this, they have the personnel to do it, they have the authority to do it, they have the power of subpoena if necessary. And it seems to me that this some logical questions, like we were just mentioning, were not pursued at all. And it just kind of leaves open interpretation of another theory, a theory that states things quite differently, that perhaps this wasn't what we were shown on TV, what we've been told through the mainstream media has not been the truth, that something is being covered up here.
And did you also, take a look at the media, you know, coverage and everything else to examine that, to understand what was being shown to the public? I mean, and see the holes in that as well?
Yes, I've looked at quite a bit of clips, many of which are available on YouTube at this point. And a lot of things were shown early but not shown afterwards. There was a flight made by J.B. McIntyre, I believe, flying over the Pentagon and saying, I don't see any signs of a crash here. And that I don't think was shown many times, obviously. I don't think McIntyre has been able to disavow it. I think he tried to disavow saying that, but I don't think his explanation washed.
All right, and there's also the case of a CNN reporter who was on the scene stating that on the ground, and he kind of disavowed that also. You see a lot of people actually disavowing these limited clips of things they said on that day in interesting ways, too. I mean, did you observe that as well?
Yes, I did observe that. I mean, I'm just trying to put myself in the position of such a person who saw something that maybe they weren't supposed to see. They're probably deeply convinced about losing their job or worse, and they feel pressure to change their story.
So we've covered the other two planes. What about the two that you did think take off? I mean, were they actually hijacked in your estimation or what?
No, I don't think any hijackings took place.
Oh, on none of them? Not just the two planes that didn't take off, but none of the four planes were hijacked?
I don't think any of the planes were hijacked. I think, again, from the point of view of those who could easily fashion such a script and convince the public to go to war, I don't believe they needed to have an actual hijacking. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. If someone were ordering somebody to hijack, for example, that's one of those theories I think you're alluding to a while ago. Mm-hmm. In any event, I just don't see the evidence of it. I don't believe the phone calls as we've gone over on 93, which there are several calls listed. I think close to 30 calls were actually made or allegedly made by the passengers. And a couple of calls, maybe two, from Flight 175. But, yeah, I do think they took off. I think that's borne out by the records. I stick to a standard of evidence. It's evidence that is extemporaneous, evidence that's routinely collected for a given type of information, that in this case being the matter of planes taking off, the matter of planes being scheduled, commercial flights. Mm-hmm. They do show up in the original records for the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, Flight 93 and Flight 175. Both scheduled to go to the West Coast. The 93 was scheduled to go to San Francisco and the 175 to Los Angeles.
Right.
And I was able to track down information on where the flights most likely went. A system called ACARS is helpful in that regard. And this is very much like email in a way for airplanes. It's used, and it tracked down both of the planes as having been flying westward, far to the west of where they allegedly crashed, long after the alleged crashes.
Hmm. Could you sort of explain? Could you sort of explain what the ACARS system is in brief?
Sure. It reroutes or routes messages through remote ground stations, similar to the way in which cell phone calls are routed. It doesn't give an exact location, but the location of the station that's used to route a particular message.
Sort of like when they determine that somebody's used a cell phone and it's pinged on a certain cell tower, like that?
Yes, it's very much like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just wanted to get that in there because I was aware of it, but some people, that term goes right by them, and they're not quite sure what it is, so I just wanted to make sure we hit that. But so what you're saying is that that these planes are noticeably and traceably elsewhere.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
Not crashing into somewhere on the East Coast, but much further west at certain points than they should be, according to the official story.
Right.
So in the case of the two planes that didn't take off, well, they don't need passengers. The passengers didn't exist. But what about in these cases? Don't they have to have passengers?
Not if someone were scripting this and using connections they might have at the airlines to have planes go off without passengers. That is, after all, planes without passengers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
No telling that there's no sense that they couldn't do that. Have the planes take off and simply fly some distance away. As a part of a script, and I don't know the motivation exactly of those who scripted this, mm-hmm. but they sent the planes far away and perhaps didn't count on them being identified at some later time. But again, we know this through the what's called the Airplane Communications and Reporting System. That's what ACARS stands for. They did track down both those planes by their serial numbers. They're not tracked by flight numbers. And, you know, Chuck, I had another idea on this. Maybe those who plotted this this event simply wanted to leave clues behind, as if to say, we are in control. You're not, you, the people, are not controlling things here.
Hmm.
Maybe they didn't mind getting caught.
So you mean, in other words, for the discerning individual, they left behind the clues so you could trace it, to kind of throw it in your face?
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, as I point out in the afterword of the book, there's nothing we can really do at this point, nothing officially. We can't really punish those who perpetuated this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to gather information, trying to create a story that makes the most sense, and I can only hope that next time something like this happens, we can catch the script early on and not let our policies be affected by it.
Well, assuming that it is a script, I mean, how would somebody actually catch up with it early on, do you think? Because they sort of sprung this on us, you know, as far as me just being me. I mean, I had no idea that something like this was coming. But I mean, outside of the the PNAC document, which didn't necessarily state specifically that we were going to look for these planes, and national security directives and things like this, things that the public would have never seen. I mean, what do you think the public could do to catch on to a script early?
Well, I think that's the whole point. There's nothing that I can think of at the moment we can do. Going back to 9/11, yeah, nobody, as far as I know, had any clue that what was really going on at the time. We were caught by surprise. And I think those who plot these things count on us to be caught by surprise.
Hmm. Well, that is interesting, that's for sure. It's one of those weird things, though, where, the script writers, not necessarily the perpetrators. I mean, look, you could write a movie script and it could be turned into something, and you think you're writing a movie, and meanwhile, you're actually writing a scenario, for action.
Right.
This is a possibility, and I've heard of this kind of thing being alleged before, that, somebody writes a script. I mean, of course, we all know about the Lone Gunman TV series, having kind of given us a foreshadowing of this event, right? I mean, you've heard of that as well, right?
I saw that. I saw it. I thought it's a YouTube clip now, but yes, I did see that. Somebody making a mention of... Not 9/11 specifically, but the use of hijackings and terrorism and such.
Right.
This was a few years before 9/11, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. And that was, not necessarily the greatest TV series or anything like that, but who's to say that that's not the inspiration, as we say, for the idea for the scriptwriter to say, that would be a good scenario to use. That would certainly evoke public sympathy, The public sentiment could be easily turned against the perpetrators if we show them the perpetrators. And speaking of the perpetrators, I mean, did you look into the hijackers at all?
I have looked into the hijackers, or the alleged hijackers.
Right, alleged hijackers, thank you. You're right, because I'll tell you something. I don't necessarily agree with all of your conclusions, but one thing I do agree with, certainly, is the fact that we need to use the word alleged here. Because there's no proof for some of those individuals to have been involved whatsoever. I mean, to the point of a couple of them were still alive afterwards.
A number of them were.
Mm-hmm.
Counting here, I counted seven, at least seven that were still alive. Perhaps others were as well. Again, these were names that were plastered onto our TV screens, as I recall. Mm-hmm. Faces plastered on the screens. And as soon as people were so angry, absolutely furious about what had happened on 9/11 or what they thought happened, that the guilt of each of these persons was just assumed. And word came out that, yeah, some of these guys were still alive. It didn't really stop anything. It didn't stop this big momentum, this big wave that was sweeping the whole nation on its way to war. It's hard to stand in the way of that.
Well, that's true. And, I mean, 2 days after 9/11, see, the first day, we had, the covers of every print publication I can imagine, including the New York Times, New York Post, New York Daily News, okay, all of them with virtually the same setup on them, stating that we had gone to war, that it was an act of terror. 2 days later, though, there was a whole array of mugshots, basically. I mean, that's what I think of it as, an array of mugshots.
Right.
Of the 19 hijackers, right? I mean, and this was bizarre to me that they had even done this, but it was like, here's the face of terror, I think was the general headline. The face of terror was in the phrase everywhere. And that was meant to resonate with people that this is the face of the terrorists. At this point in time, I don't buy it, but I was swept up in that moment at that time, feeling as though I'd been injured as an American and all of that. And believe me, I was one of these guys who was very much in the camp of, if we just nuke that entire area, that'll end this whole problem. Okay. And that was the sentiment that it was meant to produce, shoving these guys in my face and giving me the idea that this was the general vicinity from which this type of wound could be inflicted upon the American people, the American psyche, the American soil, this them against us, And That was the purpose, that's for sure. But, I mean, what about these six? I mean, I count six, but you count seven, and I've heard people count higher and lower. But one thing we can all say is that there's a few of these guys certainly alive. I mean, what do you got to say about that?
It sounds like it was deliberately sloppy an account of the names. Again, I mean, early on, it was clear that there are some problems with the official theory, but no one was going to stand up and say, hey, you know, these guys are really still alive, therefore the whole official story is completely wrong. It's not like that, but I'm just saying, again, calling back to what I said just a little while ago, I can't help but wonder if those who plotted this, those who scripted it, deliberately made some mistakes, just to let us know.
Absolutely. And just a quick note for the listener, I cannot take your Skype calls while I'm on the air. I can take your Skype texts if you like, and I'll ask him the questions if you want. All right, but you're going to actually have to dial in, and I promise you that in the next hour I will get to you. See somebody on the board already, and I didn't even give out the number. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And I will throw it open for you to ask some of the same types of questions or whatever it is you want to ask, Mr. Hartwell tonight, because I think what generally happens with his writing, at least from my observation, is that I wind up with a lot of questions, Dean. I really do. I mean, I know you answer a lot of them, but I wind up with more questions from your writing sometimes than answers, and it's not to say that that's a bad thing. You actually get me thinking, okay, which is not easy to do. I mean, I'm kind of callous when it comes to a lot of books at this point, and I don't appreciate them because they're very typical. They're almost like cookie cutter to me. And I appreciate the fact that you always seem to take the reader through the process, okay? And that's why I'm doing this to you. I know it's a little bit rough, and I'm asking a couple of questions that seem a little strange, but the thing is, I want to hear about the process, you know, because that's the best part of your writing to me, is the whole process you go through. And again, like I said, whether you agree with his conclusions or not, it is very fascinating to watch somebody actually go through the process in a book form, because most authors just say, look, I'm going to tell you what to think, and here is my singular document I'm going to hang it on, and now next chapter. You know, and Dean doesn't do this, just so the listener knows. He doesn't do this to you, you know, where I don't feel like I'm being spoken down to when I read your books, Dean.
Oh,
that's what
you.
I'm saying. So I appreciate that.
All right.
But anyway, back to the story here about 9/11. Okay, so we've got hijackers that are still alive, and, you know, what type of miracle would that take? To create that situation, all right. But the thing is, if you got hijackers that weren't there, you got passengers that weren't there, you got planes that weren't there. Well, what do we have?
In some cases, an illusion that something happened that really didn't. And just to set up this idea, I do think the towers came down.
Okay.
I'm simply saying. Besides that, put in at the end of the thing, I talk about a movie, how the movie might go, and I say it's the towers come down in live demolition. In any case, I think there's been an illusion, there's been deception, and I think this has been practiced from other situations that have happened years before. We've been told things that are not true.
Well, let's run this real quick, okay? So. You do believe that, because look, if you were filming a movie, okay, just hypothetically, if this was completely a movie and you wanted to show towers blowing up, unless you're going to do it with completely computer-generated images, okay, you're going to wind up blowing up a building and showing it. This is what's been done. They build structures, they destroy them. I mean, there are whole industries that were developed in order to do this for many, many years. Like I said, CGI has kind of changed the game a bit, especially as it's evolved, but realistically speaking, you could have real-time explosives and things like this happening in buildings, and therefore it's only for a film.
Right.
Like I said, in the next hour, we're going to take your calls, we're going to get to more of this, and we're going to finish up on the idea about how this could have been done and what really happened. I'm going to get Dean's list. Stay tuned to the Ocelli Effect. We'll be back.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
American Freedom Radio is back. We're trying to become commercial free, apart from a few honourable advertisers that we would give ad space to even if they couldn't pay us. In this quest to deliver quality radio with very few annoying ads, we are now asking the listeners like you to open up and become partners with American Freedom Radio. We all know the economy is controlled, and a new system called the peer-to-peer economy is now within our grasp. That means if you'd like this network with its incredible hosts and credible information to be nothing but the content you want to hear, then you must realize that you cannot be a part of it if you're just sitting on the sidelines watching. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and pledge your support today. Donate according to your means. Some can only afford $1 a month, while others can afford $100 a month. Regardless of the size of your contribution, it all adds up to keeping the network owners and the radio hosts housed and fed at the end of every month. Thank you.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape, various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Still live in the second hour in the formerly united, currently occupied, alleged states of the artist formerly known as America. The Ocelli Effect here on American Freedom Radio. My guest tonight, Dean Hartwell, and we are talking about the book, Was 9/11 a Movie? And I'm enjoying the process, and I'm definitely enjoying the discussion so far. And I will get to your calls this hour, okay? And if you want to join in on that, it is 218-339-8525, and I will try to get to everybody, okay? So, here's the fun part. We kind of finished off the second hour, or first hour, excuse me, finished off the second hour. It's not done yet, Dean, but... but you know, I mean, it seems a little rough going through 2 hours, but I try to make it easy and give you a break here and there and talk a little bit myself because, well, I just have the nature of running my mouth. Thusly, I'm a talk show host. But the thing is, we were talking about what didn't happen a lot in the first hour. Let's get to a list of things that I do believe you think did happen, okay, because it seems to me as though, and let me know if I'm wrong, it seems to me as though you do believe that something must have happened in Shanksville, whether it was a plane or not, is another story. It seems that you do believe that something happened at the Pentagon, whether it was a plane or not, is another story. I do believe you think that the towers in New York fell, and that means all three of them.
Yes.
Right? This did happen, but as to whether it was a plane or not that was responsible for these things, yet again, that's another story. So there were people killed, for sure, right? And there were definitely attacks of some sort, but this is where you start looking at other things, right?
We start looking at other things. So far as the World Trade Center, the three buildings came down with explosives. Mm-hmm. The Pentagon also, I believe, explosives were used. I don't believe a plane struck it, and I don't think a missile struck it either. I've heard that theory. I think also something happened in Shanksville. It was not Flight 93 crashing. I don't think it was a plane crash, and I gotta say, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was something that caused government agents to go to the scene and set up the usual crime scene procedures, whereupon they let certain people in to see, like, for example, the coroner, and other people were not allowed to go in. Interestingly enough, the coroner, Mr. Wallace Miller, remarked in his first statements that he didn't see any signs of bodies and hinted that he didn't really see a signs of a plane crash either. Kind of interesting, although he did make conflicting statements a number of months later. So far as the planes go, as I mentioned, 93 and 170 flew west. I don't know where they landed. There's just not enough information available on that. And interesting, you mentioned whether people were killed or not. I don't think the people who put this thing together intended to kill anybody because it wasn't necessary. Now, whether people actually died or not, I don't know. You could have people near the building, perhaps. I don't know.
Sensibly, Dean, you know, if you're going to do this by surprise and you're going to have buildings that generally have people in them, you know, under attack in some way or other, you're going to assume that there's going to have to be casualties, right? I mean, wouldn't you assume that or no?
It seems like a reasonable assumption, but I'm not convinced that anyone was actually in the buildings at the time. I found some information suggesting that a lot of people had moved out or no longer worked there. They started moving out in probably 1998, thanks to some Freedom of Information Act information that I saw on Let's Roll forums. And also just a handful of companies owned or leased space there, which leaves it wide open. I mean, you got just a handful of companies doing this. They could easily manufacture fake names if they were to be in on it. But I don't assume that people were present that day. I just don't see a reason to, because I'm, again, taking it from a different point of view, that this is scripted. We're just being told that people died. We're told, really, again, through phone calls and just the impression we're given when we see a building like that fall down and go into pieces.
Okay. Now, a Skype question is arriving. Let me take a look at it here. And you know what? Okay, I got it. I see what you're saying. All right, really a long question. I'm gonna condense it. What about the firemen and policemen in New York City, because they didn't respond and weren't turning around out for funerals and things like that later over nobody being killed? What about them?
Over nobody being killed? Who's to say that the funerals were not faked as part of this whole ruse? I wouldn't assume things, and that's what I'm saying throughout the book. I do not assume.
But, I mean, then it's an assumption that that's a pretty large stage show. I mean, this is me talking now. That's an assumption of a pretty large stage show, because there were public funerals, there were public memorials, there were individuals getting on television talking about, say, the chapel there. His name escapes me at the moment, for the FDNY, right?
Okay.
You know, there was this stuff being broadcast. There were individuals that were involved in this. These funerals did occur in New York City, in various places. That happened. But the thing is that, and I say that from my own personal knowledge, not from the television. But the thing is that the American public could observe, and the public at large around the world could observe, that these funerals did occur. But what you're saying is you think that they could even be entirely staged.
I say that is possible, yes.
Okay, and it would be to just simply further support the script and to ratchet up more sentiment? Or do you think that there was another agenda at play there as well?
No, I mean, that makes people even more emotional. Think that specific people have been lost, and that makes people even more likely to support the war, to get revenge, putting faces on it.
So not only putting faces on the hijackers, but putting faces on the victims.
I mean,
and there were people wandering around New York City for days afterwards looking for survivors. Have you seen my dad? Have you seen? And that stuff was really happening. I know that for a fact. That's not just, you know, canned footage from somewhere. That was going on as well in New York City. I could not get in that day because they had already closed the island, because remember, Manhattan is an island. But, you know, days afterwards, when people could get in there and they sort of sectioned off that area of lower Manhattan, well, you know, these things were going on. This actually happened. But what do you have to say about that? Because there were a lot of people wandering around just looking for individuals that they said were working in this building or that building, or had been working for this company or that company. It's my dad. It's my uncle. It's my spouse. What about all them?
Well, it's easy to make an inference that because people are making these claims, that it must therefore be true. And I still wouldn't make an assumption on it that this could be part of it. Or perhaps these people in question, some of them are in fact missing, but not via the buildings coming down on 9/11.
So
there could be more to this. There could be, we don't know. It could be perhaps an intelligence operation.
But, I mean, you're saying, in fact, that you don't know that this could be sort of a composite of individuals that are really looking for their lost ones, because some people were actually lost. And then again, some of it could be staged as well. Is that what you're asserting? Like, in other words, there's no reasonable way to know for sure because of the rest of the story falling apart as it does.
Right. We don't know for sure. And I wouldn't just say I was absolutely certain of that because I've not.
Okay, so you wouldn't dismiss it entirely that there were people lost, but you're saying that there isn't good evidence for it, or what?
Not good evidence for it. It could be something that's a part of the script, so therefore I'm skeptical of it.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, there's all that going on, and of course, you know, there's the whole scenario that went down regarding the 9/11 memorial and all this other stuff. There's a memorial out in Shanksville, which I think is literally emblazoned with the words "Let's Roll" and the names
right.
of the you know, of the alleged passengers on that plane as well. And we didn't really touch upon much of what happened out in Shanksville. I mean, what do you think actually occurred, or do you just think it's one of those scenarios where we don't have a reasonable explanation to actually be able to form a legitimate story about it?
Right. I can't think of a legitimate story. It does seem that there was something that people were looking for out there in Shanksville. What it was never clear, whether it was airplane wreckage or not. But I think it became clear it certainly wasn't Flight 93 for reasons that I've given already. I don't know exactly what happened at Shanksville.
Mm. Okay. So let's go a little further into this scenario in your book, too. You know, about, okay, you realize that there's all these problems with the official story. You realize that there's all these problems with the residual to the official story. You know, the things that have to resonate afterwards. You know, where are the individuals that are the victims and things like this. You have problems with recreating all of that. So what did you find as far as a puzzle that you could begin to assemble into the beginning of the story, the middle of the story, the end of the story? I mean, where did you find yourself, and how much of the story do you think you were able to assemble?
Well, I pieced it together towards the end of the book. I ask a number of questions, and then I come up with a summary where I talk about how the movie was put together. Because so much of this information that we received was via television, television images, names of people on television, things like that, it just smacks of somebody having a plan and writing it out ahead of time. And furthermore, because of the questionable phone calls I was talking about by Betty Ong, by Todd Beamer, by other people, it sounds to me like people were simply recruited to act. It was an acting performance. That's what ties into the idea of this being a movie. And I explain where they might have come from. I do this again in the afterword of the book. I see also special effects. I do mention that as well. Just often the disconnect I would get when I studied the planes and passengers, or alleged planes and passengers, thoroughly and ruled out flights 11, for example, and then hearing it on the television clips that flight 11 has struck the North Tower, that 175 has struck the South Tower, knowing that that could not be true, I was able to make a reasonable inference that that was staged ahead of time, that the people in the media were primed to draw that conclusion as stated on television, calling out the proper flight numbers fairly quickly on. I see a lot of acting.
Yeah, which kind of leads to an interesting thing because, you know, I studied the JFK assassination quite a bit, and of course, the reports on television have led people to believe many things for years and years, including the fact that they saw the Kennedy assassination on TV, which was not true. That did not air that day, but they have made a composite in their memory and now have sort of grafted what they believe is the Zapruder film onto their memories because it has been so repetitiously infectious out there in the media as the mainstay of imagery regarding the Kennedy assassination. Okay, but the thing is, there are plenty of people that were alive in 1963 that will tell you they saw the assassination on television. That's inaccurate.
Right.
But the impression is that they were there because it was being reported to them. This is an interesting phenomena and also applies to 9/11 too, doesn't it?
Sure does. We've got people probably saying they thought they saw the first flight, or first alleged flight hit the towers. But in any event, obviously that this was mistaken or just outright lies about 11-175. But the problem is that the official report has scooped up these lies and taken them as part of the, I guess, the official story, because it was in the official 9/11 report that these specific four airplanes did the things that they were alleged to have done. So the, you know, the government takes what the media and the public has fed to them instead of correcting it as they could have. And I think, you know, people could be corrected about the JFK matter as well. But after a while, things kind of stick, and people aren't going to be talked out of what they thought they saw.
Mm. Well, and that happened for many years, even with firsthand witnesses. You know, sometimes their accounts, because of their impressions, got sort of, you know, warped. You know, Bill Newman, for instance, for many, many years, stated that he saw something during the assassination that no one else saw. Okay,
oh, yeah.
And that is that Kennedy supposedly jumped up in the car. Okay, now his vantage point and a few other things, you can understand what happened there. But this was seared in his memory, regardless of the fact that there's absolutely no evidence to back what he said, and he was only a few feet away from Kennedy's head exploding. You know,
right?
This does happen in human memory anyway. But even worse, when it's you know, through a secondary source like television, you know, you become psychologically ingrained with certain ideas based on the words being spoken to you and the imagery being shown to you. And this is even more clear in the 9/11 case, but there's a whole lot of misnomers about the Kennedy assassination based on those early reports that stuck with people. And it's not because of maniacs like me who sat there and exhausted themselves watching this stuff over and over and over and over again. A lot of people have these impressions from 1963, older people, that because they saw it on TV the way they did the first time, it doesn't matter what you tell them now. You know, because that's it. They saw Walter Cronkite said it, you know. So that's the end all and be all of the situation. And phone callers, I do promise I'm going to get to you. I got one more Skype question, and then I'm going to start getting the phone calls, if that's all right, Dean.
Okay.
Okay. The last Skype question, well, not really a question, but get back to the mace. Okay.
Oh, okay.
The mace, well, okay, what I mentioned, Dean is going to go into detail for you, but I have a personal experience with it, and if Dean doesn't cover it in his explanation, I'll add on to that as well. Go ahead.
Okay. Betty Ong reported that mace was being sprayed during her phone call, her alleged phone call, which lasted about 4.5 minutes. And she just kept on saying that and kept on claiming that a number of things were going on in the background. I don't know why that was slid in, why it would be in the script, or why she would say such a thing.
Right.
Well, for the trace here. Well, go ahead.
Well, what's odd to me is this, and I want to see what you have to say about this. I've been in places where mace has been deployed, okay, many times in my life, unfortunately. So here's the deal. If you're in an enclosed space with this stuff, I don't care if it's pepper spray or mace or, you know, Atlantic City mix, it doesn't really matter. Any of this stuff which has these irritating agents in it, which is meant to disable an individual if you spray it in their face, this kind of stuff, if you deploy that in a closed space like an airplane, okay, folks,
right?
Betty Ong should be choking, coughing, her nose should be running. Just from being exposed to it in an enclosed space. There is absolutely no evidence of that, and she claims that it already occurred while she is speaking relatively calmly, although in a semi-confused state. That doesn't sound like, to me, that she has been in an area in an enclosed space with mace or pepper spray or anything of that sort being deployed. Now, do I sound unreasonable, Dean?
No, I mean, she sounds like she's talking about something. She's just talking about things that aren't even happening. And, again, I would agree her voice, and I would encourage people, the YouTube clip is there. It's clip footnote 133, by the way. You can see it on YouTube or hear it, and she is very calm. Not a sense of panic or frustration at all.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. No panic, no frustration, no irritation. And I'm telling you, your nose, your eyes, and your mouth will run if you are in an enclosed space with mace. Okay? I don't know how else to say that. I mean, it's
that would get around. It would get throughout the airplane pretty quickly if it were being sprayed a lot.
Right. And, you know,
she couldn't duck it.
Yeah, and it doesn't take a lot either. I mean, they could have just been hit on one pad, and, you know, okay, what if it was sprayed directly in somebody's... It doesn't matter. This stuff aerosolizes. And what do you have in an airplane but a recirculating, air feeding system? You're getting the air recirculated in a tube, basically. Hmm. Okay? So why is she not choking? I'm sorry, why is her nose not running? Why are her eyes not running?
Well, another thing, Chuck, the people answering her or talking to her on the phone, why are they asking a question like that or suggesting that, hey, you know, how bad is this mace or how do you know it's mace?
Well, that's pretty weird. Yeah, that's pretty weird, too. I mean, I guess it would be a reasonable question to say, you know, are you sure it was mace?
Yeah.
But it is kind of weird, too, but I'm telling you, there's no way that you could get away with nobody coughing, nobody covering their face. Okay, she doesn't sound like she has a blanket over her face or something where she's trying to mitigate the effects of mace or
muffled
pepper spray. She's not muffled, right? I mean, you know, stop me where I'm wrong, Dean.
No, the people in the background will be coughing, too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We don't hear that, do we?
Hear nothing. People should listen to this YouTube. It's very, very telling. And, again, it was a turning point in my decision to write this book.
Mm. So there you go about the mace. I think we covered that pretty well. I mean, unless you got some more you want to add into it. But I think that's a pretty reasonable dispositive point to make is that, you know, Betty Ong should be choking if mace was deployed.
Maybe in the other 20 minutes she's saying, hey, why are you telling me to talk about mace? But I don't know if we're ever going to hear those 20 minutes.
Well, there you go. And what happened to the other 8 minutes? And, And isn't that always the case, too, just like with the Pentagon, probably one of the most well-surveilled buildings in the world. And meanwhile, we got one camera, or, well, allegedly two, that show us the same crap, almost unidentifiable imagery to show the strike on the Pentagon. And whatever it was that struck the Pentagon, if in fact something did. What about that, actually? I mean, look, you said it wasn't a plane, it wasn't a missile. What do you think actually hit the Pentagon?
I think it was internal explosions throughout the building. And it probably took place at around 9:37, as it seems a number of clocks stopped at that point. And I think there were some people there ahead of time who went around explaining to people, hey, we've been hit by a plane. And as a way to push that story and get people to start repeating it to the media. I don't see what else or what could have hit it. Definitely not a plane. And the missile, either the plane or the missile, it's questionable. How on earth did it get into the Pentagon airspace? How was it not detected?
Right.
We protect this building, don't we?
Yeah, that whole thing too, right? Okay, so now we'll get to the phone calls. 218-339-8525. I will get everybody on who holds on. Of course, a couple of callers dropped out already. But I am going to get you on 218-339-8525. Let's take the first one, which is 706 area code. You're on the air.
Hello. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sure can.
Hey, good evening. Dean, this is Alan. I'm a big supporter of your work, and I'm a big fan of your work, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. I've been listening, and a couple things I just want to bring up. This is kind of from my own research and things that you may be familiar with, but if I may, one of the things that really opened my eyes, I don't know if either one of you are familiar with the story of the cab driver, Lloyd England.
Yes, I've heard of that, and thank you for your comments.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I just throw that out as kind of, maybe something to research later if it interests you. I think his story is amazing and demonstrates so many things that you're shedding light on. His story is absolutely fantastic. A couple other points I just wanted to touch on, and I made some notes here even. One of the things you mentioned earlier that I think is such a good point about the Ted Olson, Barbara Olson, alleged phone calls, I think it's fascinating that Ted Olson subsequently married a woman who looks strikingly similar to Barbara Olson. It's not a stretch to say that a little bit of plastic surgery would have that woman looking like his current wife. Would that be fair to say?
They sure resemble each other a lot. I agree.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. One of the other things, if I may, Tom Daschle reporting that he was called two or three times by Dick Cheney to ask him not to investigate 9/11. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes, yes, I've heard of that. I tend to believe it, knowing what I know about the individuals involved, especially Cheney. I don't think he ever wanted any investigation on this matter.
Absolutely. Of course, absolutely. Why would you if it would potentially point to you, right? The other thing is, I was looking at something the other day. The amount of money we spent investigating Clinton and Lewinsky affair was about $80 million. The budget for the 9/11 investigation was $14 million.
Well,
pretty astounding.
That shows our priorities.
Absolutely.
Set sales.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It does.
The other piece, if I may, again, just throwing these out as food for thought, so the tidbit you certainly touched on.
Let me ask you something, listener. Do you realize that also in the 70s, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which was required to examine both the deaths of JFK and MLK, and they did a reexamination of both. And by the way, just so you know, officially concluded that there was a conspiracy in both. There was a high likelihood of conspiracy in both, not lone shooters. But either way, you know, they actually returned some of the money that they were budgeted at the end. Did you know that?
Oh, wow. No, I did know that in 1999, MLK's family won a civil suit against the government. They demonstrated that more than likely there was government involvement in his assassination. That's something that never really made the mainstream news.
I talked about that a couple of shows ago, actually. That was William Pepper had brought that case in Memphis, Tennessee. And the only reason why it was a civil case is because all of the chicanery that went on regarding Judge Joe Brown, okay? And actually, I spoke about it with Joseph Green on this show. And the fact is that received virtually no coverage. If you want to read the transcript, though, there's a book called The Last Remaining Witness, or The Lone Witness, or something like this. You can find it through the King family website. And it was Dexter King and Dr. Pepper that, yes, his name is Dr. William Pepper, brought that case in a Memphis courtroom and actually did, have that case conclude that that the government was liable in the wrongful death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You're absolutely correct.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, very good. I'll check that out. I'm writing a note here on my... One of the other things I think is fascinating, you're probably familiar with Susan Lindauer and her story.
Yes.
I heard
her speak in Vancouver a few years ago.
Yeah, there's certainly all kinds of pieces of the puzzle there with, perhaps who was really pulling the strings and calling the shots. One of the other things, if you do happen to look into, again, the cab driver Lloyd England story, that is just mind-blowing stuff and raises all kinds of red flags. Those are the points that I just kind of want to touch on. And, again, just let you know I really appreciate your work. I think it's fantastic, and I'll hang up and listen from here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. I forgot to ask his name. You know, I'm terrible at taking these phone calls and remembering to ask people's names. I am just terrible at that. And, are you still there?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. No, I was
the caller. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was hoping the caller.
Hello?
Wait, he was. Wait a minute. Are you still there? What was your name, sir?
Alan.
Alan, okay, Alan, I really appreciate your call. Thank you.
Sure, thank you. Have a good night, you guys.
Have a good night. Yeah, sorry, that was my mistake. Oh, and look at this, I'm being corrected in the Skype. Yeah, the name of the book actually that gives you the transcript is called The 13th Juror.
Ooh.
Okay, yes.
I like the title.
Yes, it was The 13th Juror, and that's exactly right. It's like, you know, there's 12 jury members, generally speaking. Well, this is The 13th Juror. It is the trial transcript
right.
from that event in Memphis, Tennessee. So, yeah, it used to be available, actually, through the King Foundation website for free. They had the transcript up there for a while, but somebody got the bright idea to publish it into a book, and I have it somewhere. I went through it, and you want to talk mind-blowing, that's mind-blowing in and of mm-hmm. itself. So, yeah, absolutely, and thank you, Alan, for bringing up all those great points. I appreciate it. So, I know that I kind of cut you off a few times, Dean. I'm sorry about that. It's just my terrible habits over here. And sometimes when I'm a little, a little worked up right before a show, it gets even worse. So I do apologize. But at the same time, I think it's been good to have the back and forth a little more this time.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that, listen, the great thing is that they get to hear you answer these questions. And I'll tell you guys out there, I never prepare a guest. Anybody who comes on here, they have a general idea of what we're going to discuss, and that's it. So the way Dean is answering and what he's saying, this is what he has to come up with on the spot. This is not a matter of preparation, ladies and gentlemen. I did that one time on the air and swore to myself I will never do it again. Okay?
All right.
So absolutely, anybody who comes on this show just needs to be ready to talk about their topic. Otherwise, it's not my fault what happens. Okay. But, Dean, you've been a really good sport about everything so far, and even though I've asked a couple of questions that seem a little oppositional, they're really not. They're meant to explore, again, the process.
Right.
So let's get back to that process a little bit, though, because we didn't even get through the middle part. I mean, we kind of found out what sort of set the fire under you. We found out, sort of where your conclusion was going. But, I mean, what about the middle part while you're tracing all of these different events and you're trying to come up with a logical story? You didn't come up with that. So did you have any reason for believing that this was assembled like a movie? I mean, was there some sort of hint that got you or that led you to that conclusion? Or is this just what it presented itself as to you?
This is how it presented itself. I listened to the alleged phone calls, the ones that are available. I couldn't quite grasp reality going on. And when I was able to match that to discrepancies in records like the BTS, Bureau of Transportation Statistics, problems with flights, even flight times, problems with passengers and things that were not found at the supposed crime scenes, it just spelled something that had just been set up, something that had been faked, something that had been presented to us on television or suggested to us by people that we supposedly have respect for, maybe we don't anymore or never did, people in the media, for example, and our leaders just jumping on the same bandwagon. We've got to go to war. We've got to fight the terrorists and so on and so forth. And when I get to the point when no one's brave enough to stand up in the House of Representatives about a resolution to go to war, except I think one person did, it becomes very suspicious that it's a massive brainwashing. People getting their information from the same source or making the same mistakes about the information. Otherwise, there would have been more dissent early on.
Okay, now I've got another absolutely interesting question. I know how I would answer this, but I'll throw it open for you. What about the fact that the hijackers and some of the, they say passengers, some of the hijackers, well, I'll just read it. What about the videotape of the passengers and the hijackers that has been shown on TV? What about that?
Well, I know of one supposed videotape of allegedly of hijackers. And I pointed out in an earlier book that there was no time frame set up on the videotape, making me wonder when it was really shown and exactly how to identify these people, let alone when they were actually on this videotape. presented too many questions for me to say definitively that those were hijackers who went onto some airplane. So I don't think that was very solid evidence at all.
Mm. Yeah, well, the follow-up is that one of the tapes actually shows one of the hijackers arguing with a ticket. See, that's pretty funny, because if I'm a hijacker, I don't know, logically speaking, I think I would try not to call attention to myself until it's time.
Yeah?
I don't know. You know, that seems weird enough. That seems actually more dispositive than anything. The other problem is that, as far as I know, the airport pictured, when they show us the tape of Muhammad Atta, that's who I'm trying to think of, Muhammad Atta is not even the right airport. It's actually footage of a plane which hopped from one spot to another up in the northeast really quickly, like a 45-minute or 25-minute flight or something like that. It wasn't the transcontinental flight that was supposed to happen here.
Right. I mean, it was from Maine, as I recall.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. I mean, I haven't studied it in a while, but I think there was that. Plus the date wasn't correct on that thing, if I remember correctly.
Well, the date was incorrect or suspiciously on the Pentagon frames, but I do not believe there was a date on this particular videotape. I think that's how it went.
Oh, you know what? I might be mixing up the two things. I know the dates were incorrect on some of these alleged videotapes.
Yeah,
I know that was weird, you know. And if it was the tape from the gas station, then that would be fine. Because that was something in private hands, you'd sort of expect that maybe somebody could be sloppy or not know how to reset it. You know, especially if you're talking about old VHS devices and things like that, which, yes, were actually used for security purposes still at that point. You know, there's plenty of possibilities there, but when you're talking about, official government installations who are allegedly under surveillance by the government, you know, you'd expect some sort of accuracy to time stamping on these things, you know, just in case something really did happen. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm just asking too many questions. Am I asking too many questions?
No, I think they're all reasonable questions, which should have been asked right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is the trouble, is that, you know, a lot of people were, again, swept up into the post-9/11 fervor. That, you know, that sentiment that really captured a whole lot of the population. And, again, I'm ashamed to say I was one of them. It took me until at least 2005, I think, is when I really started to examine this, because there was a lot of people asking questions, and my first question was, well, either, you know, they're just completely nuts, because, you know, a lunatic can get a webcam, okay? A lunatic can get a webcam, and a lunatic can go on the internet and say anything, so maybe that's a possibility. But I started to see individuals that were coming around to completely different conclusions, and I said to myself, well, if there's that many of them, there must be something behind it. And honestly, that's where I shifted gears, was in 2005 because of that.
Right.
You know, where I started to realize that a lot of this is a fiction. You know, and I don't even necessarily agree that there were absolutely no planes, which, you know, some people say there were just no planes in any of these events. But I'll tell you two places where You probably will not be able to convince me till my dying day that there was airplanes, and two of them was the Pentagon and Shanksville, because I see zero evidence of it, in my estimation.
Right.
You know, zero evidence of a plane literally crashing at those sites. A plane flying over those sites is evident, in my estimation, based on a cross-section of interviews and things like that. A possibility that a plane flew over the Pentagon at the time is there, but a plane striking the Pentagon is not. And I don't know what that was in Shanksville. I really don't.
Yeah.
I have no clue, and I agree with you there. There's really no definitive way to know based on the available evidence. I think that's what you were saying about it, wasn't it?
Right. I don't see enough evidence to form the conclusion that a plane struck either the Pentagon or Shanksville, which leads me to believe that there was no plane there. Could have been something staged. Yeah, we could have been completely misled about it by those who arrived on the scene.
Hmm. So what do you think about the TV footage of the plane striking the towers? How about that? Because we didn't really talk about the footage itself. We did say that, you know, there's no way anybody could have seen the first plane strike because that, even according to the official and mainstream story, did not broadcast until later on that night.
Right.
Okay, that's for certain. No matter who you ask, nobody saw that live. Okay, but
right.
What do you think of that footage? I mean, that the first plane strike, the second plane strike, I mean, all these things became available to us later. What do you think of that footage?
I think it was graphics depicting a plane. I don't think the plane actually struck. I think it was the demolitions that brought it down, and the graphics were planned, obviously, ahead of time to appear to strike the building as the demolition started to go off. I think that it could have been done. I think the capacity is there for those who manipulate images and graphics. I don't think that part of it would have been that hard. I think they could have snuck it right in there and and convinced people. And also the witnesses were completely divided. Many different opinions were expressed by the witnesses or people who purported to be witnesses. Some said they saw planes. Very few said anything about a commercial plane, though. Some said missile. Interesting thing is nobody that I could tell, and not that I've heard every last thing, but I don't hear anybody saying what they heard. It would seem that if a plane were flying so close to where the eyewitnesses claimed to be, that it would have created an enormous sound. It would have probably blown their eardrums out.
Well,
I don't hear much about that.
Yeah, a couple of the witnesses that were, you know, like a block or two away, those people... allegedly. Those people claim to have heard things. You know, they heard the plane come in, that, you know, there was a loud noise or rumbling and this kind of thing. And I take rumbling, you know, not necessarily as a as a telemetry kind of description. I think of it as a noise. So I'm making an assumption there that they meant a noise as opposed to feeling a rumbling.
Right.
But there was a rumbling coming in and this kind of thing. So, you know, maybe I'm making a misstatement there. But no, the odd thing is that the plane strike and all this kind of stuff, I mean, outside of, people describing booms, of the strike or the explosion or whatever it is you want to call it, no, you don't really hear about the approaching plane noise very much.
No, that would be interesting to hear more about if there was a witness who said such things. But I'm not inclined to think there was a plane there, and I think some of the witnesses or supposed witnesses might have been planted to keep the idea going or promote the idea within the media, because obviously if something like this happens in the public, they're very public place, there's going to be witnesses. Mm. So witnesses had to be summoned and asked questions like that.
Well, right, and there was a couple of guys also that described what they said was a commuter plane.
Right.
There was somebody that said that the plane had no windows, separate from the commuter guy. There was another one that thought that it might have been a military plane. Varied descriptions here. I mean, you know, a couple of people said that they saw logos, which I find kind of amazing.
I do not believe that.
I mean, it's all logos. That's almost as bad as the star witness for the Warren Commission being able to tell you height, weight, skin color, and everything else through a dirty window from six doors down. But who's counting, right?
Right.
So that's pretty fascinating right there. And of course, I love to point to the fact that at least the Warren Commission gave us their ridiculous evidence to contradict their story. 9/11 Commission didn't even give us the courtesy of that one. Or
no.
You could say that the 9/11 Commission learned from their mistakes and decided not to give us the evidence so we could not challenge their conclusions. What do you got to say about that?
Well, that's pretty clever. I mean, one of the things that convinced me that the Warren Commission had it wrong was I bothered to read certainly the 500-page summary, which if you just read that by itself, you'll see a number of contradictions to the conclusions. And also reading some of the 26 volumes, although I haven't read all of them by any means, still there's a goldmine of information that contradicts in that case. the conclusion. So, sure, I mean, these 9/11 Commission people had 38 years or so to think about this, and they were probably told or informed, you know, we've got to keep this simple. They probably had people around telling them or hinting that they shouldn't make that kind of mistake. Sure, they had plenty of time to think it over.
Hmm. And, again, I can't take the Skype calls while I'm on the air. You actually have to dial in 218-339-8525 if you want. I still have the one listener on hold. I've had a couple of people jump in and out of the queue there. If you get on, I'll put you right on because we're going to start. We're almost out of time, believe it or not, Dean.
Wow.
See, everybody says the 2 hours goes by really quick with me. Sometimes people go, well, you know, I don't know if I want to talk for 2 hours. And it's like, look, don't worry. I'm going to run my mouth some. There'll be a break. It'll be fine. Relax,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, things are fine.
But it seems to be flying by because I know I got maybe, oh, I don't know, 12 minutes left here, something like that. And I'm always a little off with my clock. But reality is that there is a lot of questions to be asked. There is a lot to be covered, and, you know, we're not going to get to all of it. This is why you got to buy the book.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So here's the last question I'm going to take from the Skype, okay? And it is, let's see. Okay. Well, no, I think we already kind of covered what you think happened at the Pentagon, but let's, I guess, go over it again because I think it was misunderstood. I don't know. Maybe I talked over you. What do you think actually brought down the section of the Pentagon if it wasn't a plane or a missile? You know, what was it? And I think we already did this.
Internal explosions, internal explosives.
Okay. Well, let's go a little further with it so we make it real clear. You know, do you have any clue as to who might have planted these things in advance? Because obviously they would have had to have been planted in advance. I don't think somebody ran through there that day with a demolition team, right?
That's correct. I would just say things on a circumstantial level. The Pentagon chief, Rumsfeld, was positioned on the proper side of the Pentagon. His side, which had all the... Oh, well, the major personnel and the most of the major equipment didn't get touched. The place that got exploded was really not a big area, not a lot of people supposed to be in that area, not compared to where Rumsfeld was. And it's just strange. He seemed to know ahead of time that there was going to be a strike at the Pentagon. There's reports of him commenting as he was watching what was going on in New York on TV that they were going to strike there at the Pentagon, but he didn't do anything about any evacuation. So this kind of, at the very least, the skipper asleep at the wheel, or who knows, maybe even in on it, would have provided a way for some people to get in there at the right time and put in those explosives.
Right, and given the character of Donald Rumsfeld, I would vote for the side of in on it. Brought to you by the same guy who helped to bring us aspartame. Thank you very much. From the Ford administration on to W, he continues. He's the disease that keeps on giving, as far as I'm concerned. So I have no sympathy for that man whatsoever. I'd be more than happy to see him in a criminal court involved as a co-conspirator here. So I'm not saying that he is. I'm just saying that... based on his previous acts, his wonderful, benevolent decisions to do things to people in general, I don't think that I would have a problem with him being hauled into court as a co-conspirator on this one. Anyway, the follow-up question. This is why I screwed it up, and I thought that that they were just asking the same question. What about the accounts of the people that were in the Pentagon and all that? Did you look at that? You know, for instance, there was a woman, I think her first name was April, who actually winds up. Yeah, there we go. See, I need a little reminder every once in a while. But April Gallup, like, what about that story? What do you think of that?
I've looked into her story. She sounds sincere. She says that she and her child were at her workplace at the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And there had been a big explosion and a hole, and she was able to get out of it and rescue her child as well. what I don't recall exactly is what she thought happened to the Pentagon. That would be of some interest. I should recheck that. And I have read about other accounts of people who were injured, and they were told, as I mentioned earlier, tell people that this was a plane that struck, which is kind of mysterious, but that would be part of the script.
Well,
people
absolutely.
Going in there telling people what to say.
Absolutely. And you know what? The book is called Was 9/11 a Movie? Okay, so it is a question. It's an interesting black and white cover. And I wonder if you wouldn't want to tell people where they could get it and other places they can find your work before we run out of time, Dean.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. Yes, you may find it on Amazon.com, as you could find my other 9 books, or you may go to deanhartwell.weebly.com. And I want to say this book is concise. The print is fairly large, the way I like it, and I think other readers do as well. It will give you a concise report of the planes, the alleged planes, the alleged passengers, alleged phone calls. It will go through them in meticulous detail, but not take a whole ton of your time. It's a fairly quick read. Go for it.
Yeah, that's for sure, and I'll tell you something else about Dean's books. I did forget to mention that. They are visually easy to digest. He does make sure that the typeset is not brutal on anybody, and I really appreciate that given my visual problems. Also, he does not necessarily strain the reader. That's true. It's an easy read, but not a dumb read, okay? There's a big difference. And again, I do appreciate the seriousness with which you approach this stuff. It's not as though, you know, you're making jokes and, well, occasionally actually you do make a joke, but it's kind of interesting the way you do it. But there's a lot of stuff that's contained in all of Dean's books, and there are 10 exactly. I didn't know that. I thought there was around 10, but there are 10 exactly that are out there. Planes Without Passengers, Questions I Wasn't Supposed to Ask. I mean, there's other titles as well. I mean, any other ones that we should throw out there?
The second edition of Planes Without Passengers and Truth Fly, Rumors Fly, Truth Walks as well.
Nice. Definitely. And like I said, it is the style of the author. It is the very interesting way with which he presents the information that makes him stand apart. So I do appreciate that and definitely appreciate you taking this time with us tonight, Dean, because, you know,
you're welcome.
It's definitely fascinating to kind of run somebody through the ringer who's taken the time to create a book like this. And, you know, but hopefully I didn't tire you out or anything. And you feel like, you know, we've done a decent interview. And I say again, not necessarily that I support every single one of Dean's conclusions. I am telling you that the process is fascinating and that it is sound and reasonable. It's not just craziness. And there is plenty enough craziness published out there. Okay. if you want craziness, go get it. If you want something that's well thought out, go get Dean Hartwell's books. There you go. There's my endorsement.
All right.
You're quite welcome. And I'll tell you something else, Dean. If there's any final thoughts you want to throw on this or 9/11 or anything, go right ahead.
Thank you, Chuck. Pleasure to be here tonight. I enjoy writing, and I'm always looking as the audience as part of this process that Chuck was talking about. I write and I check it, and then I hand it to somebody to look over, and then I rewrite it, and so on and so forth. You know, sometimes I make mistakes. I had thought at one time, for example, that passengers landed in Cleveland, and I had to correct that. That's not a problem. This is all ongoing. I'm just telling you what I believe to be the case through the process that I go to. And I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy getting feedback. Thank you.
Right. So definitely you can contact Dean. You can also find him on Facebook. I don't know how willing he is to accept friend requests and all that, but you can also find him on Facebook. And you'll find him on my friends list and all that. And I do appreciate you putting out that event for the show, by the way. That was pretty cool. You actually have the distinction of being the first guest to put out their own event for the show. And because I've done that in the past, and like I don't like the low responses, but don't feel bad about your low responses, Dean. You got a higher percentage than when I put it out. And
wow.
Supposedly it's the people that that listen to my show all the time and everything too. And it's funny because they don't click that they're going to the event because they don't understand that they don't have to physically go to my radio show.
But
you did that as well. So there you go. You've distinguished yourself in that. I say that the process of the author is the most interesting thing, and you're one of the few that does it. And you've also done this for us. So again, Dean, thank you. And thank you to the listener for tuning in to the Ocelli Effect here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. No rules, baby. No taboo topics. Have a good night.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
What kind of person are you? How do you see yourself? Are you the kind of person that lets everyone else do all the work, just hoping that you'll be able to get some of the crumbs that fall from the table? Or are you the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and does the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do? Are you hoping that all the activists giving their blood, sweat, and tears to serve humanity are going to solve all the world's problems? Or are you just wondering, is there something simple I can do to contribute? Yes. Yes, there is. Help us. Help us do what we do. Partner up with American Freedom Radio today by gifting a regular amount to support the network and your favorite hosts, bringing you less commercials and more information. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today from between $1 and $100 per month, according to the kind of person you are. Thank you very much for your support.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape, various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are. We are. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.